Good evening. I'm your host. I think everyone wonders what they would do if they saw a ghost. Don't let the ghosts and the ghouls disturb you.
Anything Ghost, number 273, the 2020 Mega Macabre Halloween Special. Welcome to Anything Ghost. I'm the host, Lex Wall. No, Vincent Price is not the host. Sorry to disappoint you. This is the long-awaited 2020 Mega Macabre Halloween Special. Please note that it's going to be released in at least two parts, released on the same day. Get ready for true ghost stories, historic ghost stories, local ghost legends, some read by me, some by others. I don't know what else to add, just that I'll talk to you on the other side of the podcast. We're going to start the show with a story from AJ in the United States. Ledge View, my haunted childhood home. I now live far away from the childhood home of which I am going to tell you about, but my family still owns the house. It sits abandoned and empty in the middle of its wooded lot, the scary house of the neighborhood. I return to the house once or twice a year to check on it. As I sit here in my old room, I can still feel the energy of this house. I would say that growing up here has made me sensitive, the result of living in a house with a negative energy so strong that nearly everyone who visits can feel it. The house is a large two-story ranch that sits in the middle of 6 acres of woods and is set back several hundred feet from the road. In the summer, you can't even see the house from the street because of the overgrown trees and foliage hanging over the driveway like a dark tunnel. In the winter, the white facade of the house looks like a scary mask staring out through the tangle of bare trees. It's one of those houses that has a name because it seems to have its own spirit. Its name is Ledge View. My family bought Ledgeview in the early 1990s. We moved when I was 6 years old. It was built hastily in the early 70s, and from the beginning, the upkeep of the place was a nightmare. There was always something broken that required attention, and it was hard to keep the house looking nice and welcoming. Inside, the house was arranged in a long line. At one end of the long upstairs hallway, and the bedrooms and bathroom at the other end. In the middle of this hallway, a staircase led to the lower level, which was arranged almost the same, except there was no kitchen downstairs, just a large, finished, great room, and a long hallway with four rooms and a bathroom. The downstairs was where I felt most uneasy as a kid. Sometimes I would walk from my bedroom at one end of the long hallway upstairs, past the stairway to the kitchen for a nighttime drink. As I walked past the stairs, I could feel an intense, angry energy radiating from the basement. It felt like heat from a heat lamp shining on the side of my face as I walked by, though of course the house was completely dark. In the 12 years that I lived there, I never once looked downstairs when I felt that feeling, as I could just tell that I didn't want to see what was looking back up at me from the bottom of the dark stairwell. My computer desk was set up in the great room on the lower level, on the side of the room opposite the long hallway. Growing up in the early 2000s, I would spend hours and hours sitting at my computer, chatting with friends on Instant Messenger and browsing the internet. Every once in a while, I would start to feel the intense negative energy building like heat from a fire on my back. And sometimes, it would be accompanied by a terrible smell like a dead, rotting animal. I could tell that it was coming from the long, dark hallway at the other end of the room. I would often sit there and try to ignore it, but the intensity would build and build until it was nearly unbearable, and I would have to get up and go upstairs. A few times I worked up the courage to walk over and look down the hallway. Usually, all five doors along the hallway were closed, and it felt like something evil was lurking behind one of them, but I could never tell which one. A few times, as I walked past that hallway on my way to the stairs, I caught a flash of movement down the darkened hallway, but when I looked back to see what it was, there was nothing there. When I was 15, my parents bought another, smaller house in a neighborhood on the other side of town. They kept Ledgeview because there were so many belongings and furniture stored there that it would never fit in the tiny new house. I chose to stay in my old room at Ledgeview rather than moving across town to the new house. This meant I spent many, many nights alone, and I had plenty of time to listen to the dead silence of the place. The house had radiant electric heating, which meant no furnace, no air vents, nothing to make the usual house sounds at night. Often I would invite my friends up to the house just to have some company, and they all sensed the darkness of the place as well. Many of them refused to stay over, and they had no problem telling me that was because Ledgeview was so eerie. One time I met up with several friends of mine at Ledgeview, and we all hopped in one car to go somewhere. When we returned, we pulled into the U-shaped driveway closest to the house, and we could see the darkened windows of the kitchen and the dining room. Every light in the house was off, and we just sat in the car for a while and chatted, because we knew no one else was inside the house. As we sat there, a light came on in the living room, and it shone through the kitchen window. Our conversation stopped. The light attracted our attention. As we stared in surprise at the dim light, a dark shadow passed between the lights and the window, like someone was walking down the long hallway inside the house. One of my friends said, "There's someone in your house." We immediately jumped out of the car and ran inside to confront the intruder. When we got inside, everything was dark and silent. Just the one light that we saw turn on in the living room. We searched the house room by room, turning on every light, checking inside every closet and under every bed. Some of my friends stood by the two doors, making sure no one could leave the house undetected. We all saw the shadow through the kitchen window, and we were certain that someone was hiding in the house. After going through every room and checking every single space in the house that a person could be hiding, we were baffled. I knew it had to be the house playing tricks on us. Sometimes I had parties at Ledgeview, and I would always invite my friends to stay over after the parties, and there was plenty of room in the house for them to crash. There were actually two living rooms upstairs with comfortable couches to sleep on. Right from the beginning, some guys refused to stay inside at all, opting instead to sleep in their cars in the driveway. There was one time when two of them decided to sleep on the couches in the living room closest to the stairs. They got comfortable, and I said goodnight and walked to my room at the end of the hallway. Several minutes after I settled into bed, I heard a commotion from the living room and the sounds of my friends talking excitedly. I got out of bed and walked over there to ask them what the matter was, and they said they heard a voice from the basement echo up the stairwell. They said it sounded electronic and childlike, like a doll that can talk, but they couldn't make out what it said. We went downstairs and looked around, and although there were some toys down there, they hadn't been disturbed, and we couldn't find any sort of talking doll or toy. They laid back down, now on edge and freaked out, and I went back to my room. A few minutes later, I again heard them yelling excitedly, and when I asked them why, they said that they heard the voice again. We turned on all the lights upstairs and downstairs and searched everywhere for something that could be making that sound, but we found nothing. My friends opted to sleep in their car that night. Other things happened at Ledgeview, but the characteristic occurrence is that people just felt freaked out and unwelcomed at the house. Dogs would go crazy at the property, barking at nothing and clinging to their master's side when in the house. One time I left my dog in the room and went outside to look around and clean some things up. When I returned, I found my dog cowering under the kitchen table, and he had absolutely destroyed the door and door frame of my bedroom in order to get out of my room. He weighed 16 pounds and has never done anything like that before or since. I often wonder what he felt in that room that frightened him so badly. I moved out of Ledgeview to another state when I turned 18, leaving the house vacant and abandoned. I returned once or twice a year to grab some of my things, but no one has ever lived in the house full-time since then. About a decade after I moved, I was driving the car with my younger sister. She had lived at Ledgeview from the ages of 2 to about 14, and her room was in the middle of the long hallway, directly opposite the staircase to the lower level. Her door was positioned so that as soon as you opened it, you'd be looking directly down that staircase. We never really talked about how Ledgeview felt haunted before, but somehow it came up on that drive. My sister said that she had always felt the house's energy too, and that a couple of times growing up, she had opened her bedroom door at night to get a drink of water and saw something white and luminescent at the bottom of the stairs. It was usually shapeless like a cloud. However, there was one time when she thought she could make out the form of a little girl dressed in a white nightgown, just standing at the bottom of the stairs. I think that is exactly what I sensed as I walked past all of those times, never daring to look down and see what was there. In the years since I moved out, My family has been unable to sell the house, and it has sat vacant. Except for its own energy, rotting and waiting to be torn down. Some people have toured the house in thoughts of buying it and renovating it, but I think they could sense the darkness of the place and left as quickly as they could. Somehow, I think Ledgeview prefers it that way. Arcadia, Ohio. Railroad Conductor Ghost, 1890. The Tragedy. John Welsh was born in Canada in 1866, and then moved to Dalton, Illinois with his parents and six other siblings. By 1890, at the age of 24, John Welsh was working as a train conductor for the L.E.W. Railroad in Illinois. One of his brothers also worked for the same railroad. John was unmarried and was known as a sober, industrious, and hard-working young man. On Sunday, March 3, 1889, at around 8 a.m., John Welsh was making a coupling in the rail yards when the thumb of his right finger got caught between two deadwoods of two cars. The smashed thumb had to be removed by a doctor. A few months later, on Friday, May 17, Welsh was allowed back as a conductor and took his first train out since his thumb injury. After starting up work again, everything was getting back to normal for John. That is, until the early morning hours of October 3rd, 1889. John was on train number 44, hauling several oil cars and heading eastbound through the township of Arcadia. At one point in the trip, two sections of the rail cars broke loose from the engine. John Welsh had to jump into action from the caboose by setting brakes on some of the rail cars to keep them from colliding with the other rail cars and crashing. He had set the brakes on several cars and was headed toward one of the oil-carrying cars when the section of the rail cars that he was on crashed into the middle section of the rail cars. The collision crushed his head between two of the cars. John Welsh was unmarried and only 24 years old. The Ghost of John Welsh. The Ohio city where John Welsh lost his life was in a township called Arcadia. It sits about 8 miles between two larger cities, Findlay and Fostoria. The railroad tracks that John's train number 44 was on run parallel to Highway 12, which runs right through the middle of all three of these cities. As I said, John had been killed in May of 1889. By January of the following year, 1890, reports were coming in from the Arcadia area about a midnight phantom who was terrorizing employees of the L.E.W. Railroad. Trainmen on the L.E.W. Railroad between Findlay and Fostoria in Arcadia were greatly disturbed by what they claimed was the ghost of the dead conductor, John Welsh. At that time, there was a dense woods to the side of the tracks. That caused an arch in the track above the rails, and this was where John Welsh met his fate. The midnight train that ran from the waterside city of Sandusky, Ohio, and headed west to that spot where John Welsh lost his life, was where employees would see the headless apparition of John Welsh nearly every night. Engineers and other officials said that when the woods were reached, an object, looking like a headless man, would come walking slowly out toward the track with a lantern in his hand. The lantern was waving backwards and forwards. The apparition was plainly visible until the engine passed by. At that point, the phantom slowly turned and faded away among the trees. Because of the ghost, the crews who made that trip abandoned that run and were transferred to other divisions of the road. The engineer who brought the train through in mid-January was so terrified over encountering the headless conductor that when he reached the next stop, they had a difficult time convincing him to continue on to the final destination of Lima. He said he would not go through that experience again for any amount of money. No other trains were annoyed by the ghostly conductor, but that was explained by the fact that no other crew at that hour passed that spot where John Walsh lost his life. Employees became very concerned about experiencing the ghost, and unless something was done about the spirit of John Walsh, it appeared that the midnight train was going to have to be abandoned. Now keep in mind, this was 1890. The electric light bulb had only been invented 10 years prior. And that train would run through that area at 1 in the morning. So there weren't any city lights. The only light on those tracks were the headlights from the engine. The conductor would be by himself in the dark, maybe a dim yellow light bulb in front of him. Nothing but the sounds of the train around him. And then, in the headlights, he saw a headless body with a lantern walking toward the tracks. If you ever happen to be in Ohio on the 12 Highway between midnight and 1 in the morning, and you're heading west from Sandusky, Ohio, if you happen to hit some dense woods just outside the small township of Arcadia, pull your car over to the side of the road and take a look to the north toward the railroad tracks. You just may see the headless ghost of the 24-year-old LENW railroad conductor, John Walsh. And you too will probably never make that trip alone again.
This is Marilee.
And Byron.
From San Antonio, Texas.
And we want to wish you a happy Halloween.
Hi, Lex and listeners. This is Annie from New Jersey. Happy Halloween, everyone. I've sent in a few stories over the past few years, and this year for Halloween, I decided to do a little research into haunted art museums. And the one that got me started was the Philadelphia Museum of Art. They have an amazing collection of Chinese art, artifacts, furniture, entire rooms brought over from China. Some of the items there are hundreds, if not thousands, of years old. And several years ago, a security guard there told me that any guard who works the overnight shift in the Chinese section is told, if you hear a dog barking and running around, don't bother checking on it. It's just the ghost from the dog cage. So he may have been pulling my leg, but I thought that was a pretty good story. So it got me thinking that art museums would really be a great place to be haunted, because they're full of all handmade items, and they're not just art, you know, paintings and sculptures. There are antiques and personal items and artifacts from all over the world. And a lot of things are hundreds, if not thousands, of years old. And it wouldn't be surprising if there were spirits still attached to them. So I did a little research, and I actually found a few dozen museums that claim to be haunted. And don't worry, I'm not going to tell you about every single one of them, because we would be here all day. But I just pulled out some of the more interesting ones, I thought, and I'm going to share them with you. So here we go. Now, one of the reasons that art museums may be haunted is often they're in old buildings that they've been converted into art museums later. And the hauntings may be connected to the original function of the building and have nothing to do with the museum itself. So, for example, in Rhode Island, there is the Newport Art Museum. And that had originally been the John Griswold Museum, or the John Griswold Mansion, I beg your pardon. And the hauntings in that museum are said to be the ghosts of the Griswold family. The Michener Museum in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, was originally a prison. And the Yellowstone Art Museum in Billings, Montana, started out as a county jail. And the hauntings recorded in both of those are of former prisoners and employees. The Fremantle Arts Center in Australia was built in the 1860s as, let me get the title right, Convict Establishment Fremantle Lunatic Asylum and Invalid Depot. That's quite a title. And you can tell from the title, you know, what the hauntings are associated with in that building. And of course, the Louvre in Paris, home of the Mona Lisa, was built in 1190 as a fortress and reconstructed in the 16th century as a royal palace. And there are many hauntings recorded at the Louvre, and they mainly have to do with the hundreds of years of history and, you know, people being murdered there and all kinds of things going on there. So with those examples, they have nothing to do with the building being a museum. And in the case of residual hauntings, we have to assume that the spirits may not even be aware that they are museums. However, there are several museums which the hauntings are very much associated with them being museums. And so here are a few of those. The first one is the Crocker Art Museum in Sacramento, California. In the 19th century, Judge Edwin Crocker purchased the property and the buildings on it and converted them into a private mansion with the art museum annexed to it. And it also included a natural history museum and a library. And he filled the museum with his private collection. The family moved into the mansion in 1872, but the judge died 3 years later. His wife, Margaret Crocker, took over the museum until her death in 1901, except that she never actually stopped supervising the museum. Over 100 years after her death, her ghost is still seen on a regular basis, making her usual rounds and seeing that everything is in order. Security guards have seen her. Motion sensors and temperature sensors are set off, usually between midnight and 3 a.m. Employees say she seems disturbed when exhibits are moved around and when paintings that she installed are taken out for cleaning until they're reinstalled. And apparently she's not a fan of contemporary art, because in July of 2002, two modern sculptures which had just been installed inexplicably fell off of their pedestals and were damaged. The second museum I'm going to tell you about is the Speed Art Museum in Louisville, Kentucky. It was established in 1927 by Harriet Speed in memory of her husband J.B. Speed, and she filled it with the hundreds of works of art which they had collected in their 6 years of marriage. Her ghost manifests as a full-body apparition in a white dress, as a cloudy white mass, as cold spots, or simply the scent of her rosewater perfume. And she mainly shows up at night supervising the galleries. Two security guards who were on their rounds saw her smiling at them. Apparently, she was pleased that they were doing their jobs well. But one guard who fell asleep awoke to find her scowling at him disapprovingly. Now, while Harriet and her husband reportedly were happily married for their 6 years until J.B.'s death, Harriet was actually the second Mrs. Speed. J.B.'s first wife was named Cora, and he apparently never quite got over her death. And apparently Harriet never quite got over her jealousy for Cora, even after her own death. In the museum, there's a portrait of Cora Speed. And every now and then, the label identifying the portrait peels off of the wall by itself. And at least once, the portrait itself was inexplicably taken off of the wall. Cora wasn't the only target of Harriet's jealousy. In the museum, there's a portrait of a beautiful gypsy woman who was admired by many people, including Mr. Speed, and the label for that portrait has also been known to fall off for no reason. So there are museums all over the world that claim to be haunted, and the most famous museums, the Louvre, the British Museum, the Museum of Modern Art, Chicago, San Francisco, you name it. But the museum that has it all when it comes to haunting is the Cleveland Museum of Art in Cleveland, Ohio. Security guards have caught ghosts and orbs, or security cameras, excuse me, have caught ghosts and orbs. Decorative arts wing contains antiques, is noticeably colder than the rest of the museum, even though it has the same heating and ventilation as the rest of the building. The overnight security guards have had their flashlights turn off and on, and they've seen full-body apparitions. Now, the sightings that have been reported include the following. Former museum director William Milliken, who roams the galleries at night in a tweed jacket and carrying a folder under his arm. People who have seen the ghost have confirmed its identity from photos of Milliken in the museum archive. There's an antique mirror where visitors looking into it have seen people standing behind them, and when they turn around, there's nobody there. In one gallery, there's a painting of a little boy, and that boy has been seen and heard running and laughing in the room where his painting is, and people who have seen him noted that he looked and was dressed as the same as the boy in the painting. There is a painting, the portrait of Jean-Gabriel de Thiel at the signing of the Treaty of Vienna from 1738. Monsieur de Thiel has been seen standing in front of his portrait, admiring it, and then disappearing into the painting. But the most famous haunting at the museum comes from October 2015. The museum was preparing an exhibition of paintings by the French Impressionist Claude Monet. During the installation, an employee took a picture of the gallery space, and you could see the first floor gallery with a large blown-up photograph of Claude Monet with his signature long gray beard and the hat that he always wore. And in the employee's photograph, you can also see the second floor balcony where there is a man leaning against the railing, apparently overseeing the installation, and he looks exactly like Claude Monet in the photograph directly below him. The museum curator never saw the man that day and insists that no one in the museum fit that description. No one saw that man, but he is in the photograph. Now, I've seen the photograph. If you go online, you can Google Cleveland Art Museum, Claude Monet, and that photo will come right up. The man on the balcony doesn't look like a ghost to me. He looks like a person standing there, but he does look exactly like Claude Monet in the photograph below him. So the Cleveland Art Museum has it all. They have former employees still haunting the place. They have people, you know, that are in the portraits in the museum looking at their own portraits, and you have artists overseeing the installation of their own artwork. So you gotta love it. So anyway, that's it, guys. I really had fun doing this research. I hope you enjoyed it. And happy Halloween to everybody all over the world. And this year, 2020, like no other time, take care.
Close your eyes and picture this. Fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes for easy home cooking with the family, delivered right to your door. Now open your eyes and see America's number one meal kit, HelloFresh. I've been enjoying HelloFresh recipes for many years, and they just keep getting better. Each meal box contains 3 5-star chef-created recipes that has options for everyone, including low-calorie, vegetarian, and kid-friendly recipes. We got our latest delivery to our doorstep, and the first one I tried right out of the box, which the contents are made from recyclable and or already recycled content, was a vegetarian sweet potato carnitas recipe. I followed the beautiful, glossy, easy-to-follow instruction card, washed, chopped, oiled, spiced, and baked the veggies, pan-fried the onions and peppers, whipped together the fresh salsa, and in 30 minutes, we were savoring the delicious sweet potato carnitas. It's a recipe we couldn't stop talking about. And if you don't believe me, a long-time Anything Goes listener, Anne from New Jersey, wrote me, "I just made my first recipe, pork katsu with sesame carrots and ginger rice, and holy cow was it good! Seriously, I am a lousy cook, and even I couldn't screw it up. I'd been thinking about getting HelloFresh for a couple years, and your promo finally convinced me to try it, so thank you. Anne used the special Anything Ghost $80 off code for her order. You should do the same. Go to HelloFresh.com/anything80 and use the code anything80 to get a total of $80 off across 5 boxes, including free shipping on your first box. That's HelloFresh.com/anything80 and use the code anything80 to get a total of $80 off across 5 boxes, including free shipping on your first box. HelloFresh.com/anything80 and use the code anything80. Angelia in Esparto, California. Haunted house in Esparto, California. When I was 2 years old, my family bought a very old house in Esparto, California. Our family was an extended one, with my grandparents living with us and taking care of me, while my father worked and my mother attended cosmetology school. We moved into the house in spring, and it wasn't long before strange things started to happen. The first incident occurred when my grandma was in the kitchen cooking dinner. My grandfather and I were sitting in a different room at the dinner table when she came flying out of the kitchen looking very scared and said there was something in there. My grandpa got up and went in to see what had scared her. He found nothing. However, she swore a dark presence, known as a shadow person these days, had manifested itself in the corner by the window. She said it felt very unwelcoming and dark. Shaken, but not wanting to be, she went back to finish dinner and wouldn't talk about it. She was a very no-nonsense person, and it was strange to see her not okay and a bit apprehensive about that area of the house after that experience. As spring turned to summer, the old house began to wake up. The sound of doors opening and closing, with footsteps going up and down the stairs, pacing the hallway, becoming a common occurrence. And it always originated from the front door, which we rarely used as the parking was out back next to the back door. My grandparents and parents tried to downplay these things, telling me there was nothing to be afraid of, and that sometimes spirits remain in places. But I could tell they were learning to deal with it, too. Time passed, and I grew. But the house still had that strangeness to it, usually peaking in late summer, early fall, then a quiet time during winter. Shadow people and crashing noises with no reason became normal. Scary, but normal. And a basement with an area of concrete dug up and replaced didn't help the creepiness of the house. My grandparents were very social folks and made new friends in the area. As time rolled on, we had visitors on a regular basis, and we greeted them with open arms and food and drinks. It was our custom to spend time in the front living room with the guests. One such visit started totally normal. Just people stopping by to visit. Everyone was seated, talking, when I was asked to turn off the TV. I looked over and the TV was off, so I was a bit confused. But it was then that I noticed there was a sound of whistling in the general area of the TV. As I sat and stared at that area, I was told again, "Turn off the TV! It's rude when we have guests." To which I replied, "It's not on, it never was." The guests and my family became silent. We stayed still and quiet, listening to the most beautiful tune being whistled from the corner of the room. It was a pure and heart-aching tune that I had never heard before. Our guests sat quietly for a few more minutes until the sound stopped. Then they suddenly and quickly began to get ready to leave. They did leave, and even though they still visited, they refused to ever come inside again. Then the year I turned 6, things really started getting active. At night, we would hear slamming doors and crashing around the house that sounded like a fight. We all were awakened several times, what sounded like books and boxes being tossed around in the upstairs bedroom. Yet when we went up to the room to investigate, there would be nothing going on in the room except the sounds, which would continue on all around us, and then just quickly stop. During that time, more and more I was seeing dark shapes in the open closet in my bedroom. I should mention that the old house didn't really have closets. It had areas in the room set up to hang clothes like an open armoire. I was freaked out by now, but my family kept trying to calm and dismiss all the activity, always telling me it can't hurt you and don't be afraid. Midsummer. I was waking up late, as I liked to sleep in, when I heard a rustling sound from my closet. I looked over just in time to see a man in old farm-style clothing parting the clothes and stepping into the room. Needless to say, I lost my cool, covered my head with my blankets, and began to scream. It was the weekend, so my entire family burst into the room. I screamed to them, "There's a man in the closet." Dad and Grandpa tore into the closet, but nothing was there. They showed me that no one was in my room and assured me no one could get into the closet. But I knew what I saw, and I told them in great detail what he looked like and what he was wearing. Grandma and my mom took me downstairs and comforted me, telling me that the house and the ghost could not hurt me, and that they believed me. I was relieved a little bit, but after that I was shaken, and I had problems sleeping alone for months. Late summer that year, my mother was killed by a DUI driver. It was a horrible time for all of us, and the house too. The activity increased to almost daily occurrences. Just the little things, noises and small items being misplaced. But the feel of the house changed as well. We buried my mom and tried to get on with our lives as best as anyone could. Four months after the funeral, my dad, Grandma, and I went to Sacramento to shop. It was a good hour trip each way, and we had several stops to make, so we were gone most of the day. Upon arriving back home, we were greeted with fire trucks and an ambulance. The house had caught fire with my grandfather asleep inside. The fire originated from the closet where I had seen the man step into my room. According to the insurance adjuster, he was unsure how that could have happened. But it was the point of origin for sure. In fact, they did a deeper investigation just to be sure arson was not the true cause. Several days after the fire, we settled in a rental. At dinner, the adults were discussing the fire. My grandpa said it was the strangest thing. I would lay down to nap, and I swear I could hear someone crying. It sounded like a child or a woman was crying right outside the front door. But when I would get up to go see who was going on, no one was there. I would step outside, and the crying would sound like it was just around the corner of the house. So I would follow it, and it would move like it was leading me. And I followed it around the house with it, always being just around the next corner. I never found anything. And after a trip around the house, it would stop. But then it would come back inside, and it would start all over again. I must have walked around that house 10 times before I gave up on trying to nap in the living room. I went upstairs after that. He had fallen asleep when the little dog started barking and jumping on him. He woke up to smoke and flames coming from my room. He ran downstairs and tried to call for help, but even though the phone had a dial tone, he was unable to call out. He exited the house and ran to the neighbor's house, who called the fire department. The house burned beyond repair. We ended up tearing the remains of it down, filling in the basement with dirt, and rebuilding on a different section of the property. While some of the lumber from the old house was salvaged, we were advised not to use any of it in the new house, and we didn't. As none of us wanted to continue with the haunting we had been living through.
This is Neil and Nicola Berrigan from Blackpool, England. Happy Halloween!
This next story is from Erica in the U.S. Haunted basement in a New York building. When I was a kid, not much was out there about the paranormal. Now being older and experiencing things for myself, it makes more sense about stories I've read or heard. These are my experiences when I was living with my ex-boyfriend in the basement of a building in New York. About 16 years ago, my boyfriend at the time, Tom, had a small apartment in the basement of a building that his stepfather was super to, and Tom was the porter. One weekend, Tom had gone to Florida to help his godbrother move into his new house. That night, I decided to stay and clean up. After I finished, I watched a little TV and went to sleep. Later that night, I woke up suddenly. I sat up and was looking at something standing next to the bed. I was looking at this thing for about 10 seconds when it finally came to me and I crawled under the covers like a scared little kid. I didn't go to sleep for a few hours. I turned on the TV so I would have something in the background while I was thinking about what had just happened. Little did I know, this was the beginning of a bunch of things that were going to happen. And not just in his apartment, but the whole basement. After a while, I moved in with Tom. It was shortly after that I started having a lot more experiences. On the other side of the building was the boiler room, a huge empty area where they kept their dog, and another large area the super used for his tools and other materials. And in that area, there was a small room that had the really good materials locked up. There was another apartment on that side, which was made by the previous super. On the side where the super and the porter apartments were, there were a couple of other large rooms, which they used for their personal storage, laundry, etc., and another small empty room where they moved the dog to be closer. I'd always feel there was something in that other side of the basement, even though the whole basement had motion lights installed. Many times at night, I'd find myself looking down that long hallway to the other side of the basement because I felt something over there. And oftentimes, I felt it was staring back at me. And then there were the times that the motion light had turned on back there. I would take an old iPod and leave it in the big empty room and let it record. In a couple of recordings, I heard whispering. I even used my sister's video camera to record at night, although we didn't do it too much because Tom wouldn't want to be there for too long. I think it scared him a little. And I certainly didn't want to do it alone. The only thing we really saw in the videos was that mist that people see when they've seen a ghost around. I wasn't sure if that was enough proof, but we were glad we got something. I would sometimes join Tom when he made his rounds in the building. One day we had to go to the boiler room. As soon as I walked in, I had a strange feeling. It was dark in there. The only light was around the boiler. The The other side was completely dark, so we had a flashlight. Being my curious self, I went to the other side while he worked to see what the room was like. There was an old chair, and nothing else around but some garbage. Suddenly, I felt someone touch my hand. I thought it was Tom trying to be sneaky, but when I turned around and looked, he was nowhere to be found. He was still by the boiler. Luckily, when I went back, he was done and we left. Many nights, I'd hear footsteps. Sometimes the motion sensor lights would go on, sometimes not. At night, they would lock up the elevator door going to the basement so no one was able to go down there. That was the only way from inside the building to go to the basement. There were three doors leading to the outside, but two were kept locked. One they kept open, which was the super's apartment. Once these doors were locked at night, there was no way to get into the basement, especially with those thick latches to keep it closed. There was one night that I heard footsteps, and I could see a light from under the door. I was so sure his mom was coming to knock. But no one knocked. Even if it were his mom or stepfather, their door would slam shut. And yes, even at night, they let it slam. I looked in the peephole and saw no one. The light shut off. Eventually, we decided to move into the other apartment on the other side of the basement. Since it was much bigger and had an actual apartment layout, I was pretty excited to be there. But after about a month, things started happening. I would hear things moving in the living room area, and it would get so cold in different parts of the apartment. One night, we were watching TV, getting ready for bed. Suddenly, the door started opening and closing, but each time it opened, it would open wider. I looked at Tom to see if he was seeing what was happening, but he was glued to the TV. He didn't even notice what was going on. And then the last time, it opened all the way, and I saw someone standing outside the door. It had a white glow outlining it. After a few seconds, the door closed. It didn't open again. I shook Tom and asked him, "Didn't you see the door opening and closing just now?" "No." I told him I saw someone standing outside the door, so he got up and checked around the apartment. The door was still locked with the latch, the windows closed and locked. He was unsure what to make of what just happened. "I don't know," he said. We went to bed and made sure the door was closed all the way. After a couple of months of living there, the building owner kicked us out. He said the apartment was made illegally and we can't stay there. So we moved back to the other apartment we were in. Still hearing footsteps and motion sensor lights going off without anyone being around, we told his stepfather about everything that had happened. His stepfather told us that one day he heard a bunch of commotion going on where the recyclables were. People would put their empty boxes and cardboard there. He said that he turned the corner and he saw the boxes being thrown all over. He ran to the area, and as he got closer, it stopped. There was no one there. After his stories about the weird stuff going on, we were relieved to know it wasn't just us. One day we had an argument, and I went to the small room in the super's area where I mentioned he kept his tools and materials. I locked myself in there, just wanting to be by myself. And I know that room is definitely a place to be by myself. Boy, was I wrong. While sitting there, I felt a strangeness, almost like I couldn't hear anything, but I could hear the energy in the room. I know it sounds weird, but that's the only way to describe it. Then, I saw the doorknob turning side to side. I jumped up and ran to the door, opened it, and looked to see if it was Tom. No one was there. Even if someone was there, the hall leading to the area is so long, I would have seen whoever it was walking away. When I went to check down the hallway, no one was there either. Around that time, I got really fascinated by the supernatural. I was watching whatever videos were on YouTube, and back then they didn't have many. It would just be the same ones circulating. I'd try to find different articles on the paranormal, trying to understand more about what was happening. My mom had a book about the Bell Witch. She told me it was really interesting and let me borrow it. So I began reading it before bed every night. One night I was reading the book and fell asleep. The dream that I had was extremely creepy. I was in some weird house where there was a picture or a mirror on the wall. All of a sudden, a young girl appeared with long braided pigtails. Her clothes seemed to be from the 1700s or 1800s. Her eyes were black. She looked at me and started laughing. And it was the creepiest laugh I've ever heard. I wanted out of that dream, so I kept saying, "Wake up! Wake up!" Suddenly, I felt as if someone poked my neck 3 times, and I woke up. I turned on the lamp and stayed up the whole night. A few nights later, while I was reading the book, I turned the page and saw a picture of a girl. It was the same girl that was in my dream. As soon as I saw that picture, I threw the book and never read it again. After a while, Tom's stepfather told us that a previous super had passed away in the basement. I'd always felt it was a male presence. As for whatever was in my dream, I remember my stepfather telling us that he felt there was a bruja, a witch, down there. He would light up candles and pray for the evil spirits to go away. I thought the basement needed a good cleaning, but it wasn't my call. In our Hispanic culture, it's called a limpieza espiritual, which means spiritual cleaning. Things were still happening up until I moved back to my parents' house. Footsteps, cold spots, things moving, voices, lights going on. After we broke up, it was a sense of freedom from that. I didn't have to deal with it anymore. I've moved out of New York since then. To this day, I'm still experiencing things. I guess that's just part of being sensitive to the other side. A story from TJ in Oregon. Restaurant ghosts. I worked overnight security at a popular hotel and bar resort while living in Portland, Oregon. One slow night, I was roaming the halls of the hotel. I had to pass the kitchen and restaurant to get to different sections of the hotel. This is where I had 2 separate encounters. The first encounter. I had entered through the back of the restaurant when I noticed a shadow dart down a small walkway onto the main restaurant floor and under a table. Thinking it was a hotel guest trying to hide, I walked to where I'd seen the shadow hide, and there was nothing under the table or the surrounding tables. On a different night, I was again walking through the hotel and restaurant. This time, I was walking through the front of the restaurant when I saw who I thought was a night housekeeper standing at the entrance to the kitchen. When I walked over to stop and chat with her, there was nobody. The only people in the kitchen at that moment were myself and 2 other security guards. When asked if they had seen the other housekeeper walk through, they stated there was no one else there but us. The housekeeper had been on a completely different floor.
Hi, this is Sarah from Toronto, Ontario, wishing everybody a happy Halloween. Take care.
It's Halloween, and it's a busy time for paranormal podcasters like me. But even during this busy time, I need an escape from the paranormal world. And my go-to place is a game called Best Fiends. Best Fiends, that's friends without an R, is a 5-star, free-to-download game that offers much more than other puzzle games out there. Its bright colors, personality-filled characters, fun storylines, and top-notch animation will drive you through each challenging puzzle to attain the next level. Best Fiends is a casual game that anyone can play, but it's made for adults. I just passed level 600, and I play it pretty much every time I go into Facebook. I've found Best Fiends is somewhat like a chess match. There's no time limit, so I can take a while to look over the colorful board and decide on the best move to make, and with which character, to win that puzzle. In the game, we have these little creatures, mostly bugs, living in a place called Minutia. All the creatures lived in peace and harmony until a meteor smashed into Mount Boom. That explosion transformed the slugs on Minutia into greedy, greenery, goblin pests. Your job, should you decide to accept it, is to stop these slugs and to make your way to save Mount Boom. So engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must-play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends.
Hi, Lex and Anything Ghost listeners. This is Denise in Virginia. My ghost story goes back to when I lived about 45 minutes northwest of Chicago in a town called Mundelein in Illinois. Now, at the time, I was married and I had 3 small children. They were 2, 3, and 4. And my dad at the time was sick. He was sick with cancer. So when he finally passed, it was in July. And let me say that before my dad passed, he, for whatever reason, did not like my then-time husband, now ex-husband. Apparently, he knew something I didn't, but he always used to poke at him and always contradict everything he said, and he made it very, very clear that he didn't like my ex-husband. So, like I said, it was July, and he had passed away. And the night after he passed away, we were asleep, and my husband and I used to sleep in our bedroom with the door closed, never locked. And my 3 kids were very close. They used to sleep in the same room and more often than not in the same bed together. So it's the night after he passed away. It's about 2:30, 3 in the morning. And I'm woke out of a sound sleep to hear my doorknob, my bedroom doorknob that leads out into the hallway, jingling. And I looked over at it, and it looked like it was twisting back and forth, like maybe one of the kids was out in the hallway and trying to open the door or whatever. So I yelled, "Open the door, come in." And I waited, and the doorknob still jingled, and I could still see it moving, you know, left to right, like somebody was turning it this way and that way. So I yelled out a second time, "Come on in." Same thing. The doorknob just continued to make noise and move back and forth. So I got out of bed. I was a little upset that they wouldn't open the door and come right in. So I walked over to the door. I grabbed the doorknob. I flung the door open. And there was no one in the hallway. The hallway was completely empty. At the time, we didn't have any animals. It was just my husband, myself, and my 3 kids. So I thought, well, maybe they got mad when I was yelling at them to come into the room and they went back in their room. So I walked over to the room that they were sleeping in, and they were all sound asleep. You could tell that they had been asleep for a very long time. They weren't faking it. So then I started to get a little nervous and a little bit scared. So I checked out the rest of the house. Everything was fine. Everything was in order. The doors were locked. The windows were closed. So I finally was able to fall back asleep. I got up in the morning, and it was a weekday. And the way that usually played out was I would get up and shower first. Then my husband would get in the shower while I got my kids ready, and then took them to the babysitter and went to work. So I got up, I showered, maybe 10 minutes at the most in the shower. I got out and started getting the kids ready. My husband got in the shower. And just like a minute after he got in the shower, he came back out. And I thought that was weird. And he was all wet. And he said, "Did you have hot water when you showered?" And I said, "Well, yeah, of course I had hot water when I showered. Why?" And he said he got in the shower. The water was nice and warm. And then after like 30 seconds or so, it went ice cold. It wasn't like I had used too much hot water and it started out warm and got a little cooler and a little cooler and got cold. It was straight up. It went from nice and warm to ice cold in just like the snap of a finger. We didn't know what to do. So we went down. We thought we'd look at the water heater and make sure the pilot light's lit. And our water heater was in a little pantry that was like next to the hallway in our kitchen. It was just like a little utility closet, and it had the furnace and the hot water heater in there. And we looked at the pilot light and the hot water heater, and it was lit. So my husband said, "You know what? There's a shutoff valve at the very top of the water heater." Sorry, that's my bird. He wants to get his 2 cents in. He's like, "Let's check the shutoff at the top of the water heater." So my husband, an adult person, stands on the chair and he's able to reach on the very top. There's no way the kids could have reached it because they're too little. Even if they stood on a chair, it wouldn't be tall enough. But the shutoff valve at the top of the water heater was not only shut off, it was like one of those little round handles you have like on an outside fixture for your hose. It was a round little thing like that. And not only was it turned closed, it was turned closed so tight, I'm really sorry about the bird, that he had to put a wrench in between the little spokes in the round thing to turn it on and off. The handle. He had to put a wrench in the handle and literally force it open. It was closed so tight. There's just no way that you could have done that. And especially with how quickly it happened. So, you know, my husband opened it back up, went up, tried the shower. Water was instantly hot again. So we thought about it, and I told him, I said, "Honey, the only thing I can come up with is, you know, my dad never liked you." And I told him about the weird stuff that happened the night before. I said, "I think my dad was just coming to say goodbye to me last night and letting you know this morning that his feelings for you are still the same." I don't know. It was one of those really, really weird things. Anyways, maybe it was something else. Maybe there's an explanation we couldn't figure out, but I still like to think it was my dad coming to at least say goodbye. Well, Lex, thank you so much for your podcast. I love listening to it. It is my all-time favorite. Have a good day and take care.
Hi, this is Rebecca Yepes from Waco, Texas. Wishing everybody a spooky Halloween.
A story from Katie in the U.S. The Contorting Shadow Man and the Old Lady. I was about 6 years old when these experiences happened. When I was young, my parents had divorced, causing our family to abruptly split up and move into different homes. My dad moved my brother and I to a new apartment owned by my father's best friend. It was a nice apartment, half a house, that had many rooms and a lot of space for my brother and I to play in. Money was tight, but my dad did what he could to provide for his kids. The house seemed normal at first, but it all seemed to quickly change. My first experience began soon after we moved in. I had lost a tooth at school and was excited to leave it for the tooth fairy. That night, my dad helped me do my usual night routine of showering, brushing my teeth, and changing into my pajamas. My dad tucked me in and told me good night, and I fell asleep quickly. In the middle of the night, I woke up to a strange noise and a general feeling of anxiety. Expecting to wake up to the tooth fairy, I woke up to a shadow person standing over the top of me, inches from my face, staring into my eyes. The shadow is the darkest thing I have ever seen. It had no eyes, just empty sockets full of nothing. I couldn't scream, I couldn't cry. I sat motionless, staring into the black hole of eyes for what seemed like minutes. It tilted its head in a very unnatural motion before running into the wall and disappearing. I screamed for my dad. He busted through the closed door. I told him what had happened, but there was nothing he could do except comfort me. He reassured me that it was just a dream and that it couldn't hurt me. But I couldn't sleep after that. A few weeks later, I was taking a bath before bed. My dad always kept the door open to make sure I was safe in the bathtub. Sitting in the bathtub, you could see the bottom of the stairs. I stopped playing with my toys and looked at the bottom of the stairs. Something caught my eye. I glanced at the bottom of the stairs again and saw the same figure that I had seen just a few weeks earlier. Frightened and confused, I tried to call my dad. Before I could even get out a word, the figure ran up the stairs with impossible speeds and was at the door to the bathroom, staring at me. It was a humanoid figure, dark as night, contorting its body into unnatural positions. That's when I screamed as loud as I ever have, which sent my dad into full panic. He ran so fast up those stairs and pulled me out of the tub, thinking I was hurt. As before, there was nothing. All he could do was comfort me. I cried for hours in pure, genuine terror. A few weeks later, my brother started to experience weird and terrifying occurrences. He would be fast asleep in the middle of the night, when the stereo in his room would turn on maximum volume, blasting his death metal music. It would wake everybody up in the house, of course. My dad would bust into his room angry that he was being woken up by my brother's nonsense. My brother would exclaim that he wasn't the one turning on the music, and he was just as shocked as everyone else. That happened a few times. One night, my brother and I were staying at Mom's for the weekend. The stereo in my brother's room turned on full blast in the middle of the night. My dad, being home alone when it happened, finally realized that it wasn't my brother doing it. The final straw came when my dad was home alone cleaning. He was walking down the hallway when he saw the black shadow figure in the middle of the day. He was on one side of the hallway, and the thing was on the other end of the hallway, staring menacingly at my dad. But before my dad could blink, the thing ran down the hallway at an unnatural speed and right through my dad's body. Horrified at what just happened to him, he promptly left the house and didn't go back until the next day. We moved out of that house shortly afterward. My dad spoke with his best friend, telling him what had been happening. My dad's friend told him that an old woman had passed away in the house prior to us moving in. Being a logical person, my dad didn't think anything of it. My dad's friend had a few experiences in the house when he was working in the attic. One time he was shoved from behind while he was renovating the attic. He was scared and left the house for a little bit. When he came back to finish working on the attic, he attempted to leave, and the attic door was mysteriously locked, and he couldn't get out. He was stuck in the attic with that thing. He had to call someone to get out of the attic. In that house, doors would arbitrarily lock themselves, including the attic and basement. Footsteps could be heard, and doors would slam shut all the time. After finding out, my dad told me the woman who passed away in the house was a harmless spirit, and that I had nothing to worry about. All I can say is that she was far from harmless and loved terrifying my family. I have driven past that house in recent years, but I still can't bring myself to go inside. And David in New Jersey is going to give us some history on the haunted Bernardsville Library. Here's a local ghost legend from northern New Jersey. It's the story of the haunted Bernardsville Library in Somerset County. In the late 18th century, Bernardsville was then a town called Vealtown and was the home to the Vealtown Tavern and Inn. The inn was owned by Captain John Parker and played host to an array of Continental soldiers during the Revolutionary War, including George Washington and his men, on their travels from Princeton to Morristown, New Jersey. In 1777, Captain Parker had a teenage daughter named Phyllis. She also worked in the inn. She fell in love with a local physician named Dr. Aaron Byram. He rented rooms in the inn, but their relationship was not to be. General Anthony Wayne and his men stopped by the inn for a much-needed rest. During their stay, General Wayne discovered some important secret documents missing and thus conducted a search of the premises. Everyone was questioned and accounted for except Dr. Byram. When Captain Parker described Dr. Byram to the general, the good doctor was discovered to be a British spy named Aaron Wilde. Dr. Byram / Wilde was soon arrested and the secret documents retrieved. He was tried, convicted, and hanged. In spite of the doctor's crime, Captain Parker wanted to give the man his daughter loved a proper burial. So he had the body retrieved and brought to the inn until it could be buried the following day. At the time, Captain Parker didn't have the heart to tell his daughter the identity of the man in the coffee box, only that he was a British spy. But later that night, Phyllis overheard some men talking about the body, and in a frantic state, she tore open the casket with a hatchet, only to find the body of her lover. It is said that Phyllis went insane with grief and died shortly thereafter. Reports of ghostly phenomenon didn't start until a century later, at which point the Vealtown Tavern and Inn was being used as a farmhouse. Phantom footsteps, rustling, and windows opening and closing by themselves were reported. In January of 1877, the lady of the house was at home with her small child when she overheard the sounds of several heavy footsteps carrying something into the kitchen, and then setting something like a large crate on the floor. The footsteps then walked out the back door. In a few moments, the lady then heard the sounds of wood being violently torn apart, which was then followed by a terrifying wail. The wail died down to sobbing before ceasing altogether. Obviously frightened, but desperate to protect her child, the lady investigated where the sounds emanated from and found nothing. The next paranormal incidents occurred in the 1950s, after the farmhouse had been converted into the Bernardsville Public Library. A police officer, in passing, noticed movement in the windows and decided to investigate. The officer canvassed the building and saw the figure of a woman wearing a floor-length white dress. He reported this to his sergeant, who shrugged it off as just a local ghost of Phyllis that most people had seen before, including himself. In the 1970s and 80s, library staff reported many strange occurrences, including spotting a man dressed in 18th century clothing, the sounds of voices murmuring and humming, and phone lines being busy when no one in the building was on the phone. Then, in 1989, a young boy wandered into one of the reading rooms and called his mother over to see the dark-haired lady wearing the long dress. The mother joined her son and saw nothing. It was later learned that the spot where the boy pointed to seeing the lady was the exact spot where Phyllis Parker discovered her lover's body. The ghostly incidents have lessened over the years, but to appease the spirit of Phyllis Parker, the library staff issued her a library card, just in case.
Hi, my name is Shelley Jack Beaver, and I want to wish everyone a happy Halloween.
A story from New York, The Boarding House Ghost, 1909. The boarders who lived at Mrs. Mary Miller's boarding house at 147 East 16th Street in New York had been talking for some time about disturbing experiences from what they believed were caused by a ghost. The boarders would hear the sounds of thumping, which were sometimes regular and other times irregular, sometimes on the roof, sometimes in the halls. Between Mary Miller's boarding house, there was an alley. The alley also abutted a saloon, which was at the intersection of 16th Street and 3rd Avenue. This alley that sat between Mary Miller's property and the saloon was roofed over. One August afternoon in 1909, Mrs. Miller accidentally dropped something on that roof, so she climbed out of a window on her property to fetch what she dropped. As she was climbing back into the window, she caught sight of something. It was an ash niche with a canister in it. She looked it over and decided to leave it. A short time later, Mrs. Miller told the watchman, Thomas Daunt, about what she'd discovered. Daunt reported this to the police officer of the East 22nd Street Station. The police officer went up to the roof, removed the canister, and then took it to the morgue. It was found that the canister contained the remains of Kate Bausch, who had been cremated in 1903. A background on the deceased. Kate was born in Germany in July of 1860. She moved to America in 1884. In 1887, she married Fred Bausch, who was from Germany. Fred worked as a waiter in New York, and had arrived about a year before Kate. On June 14, 1888, in Manhattan, New York, the couple had a daughter and named her Bertha. By 1900, the couple, with their 11-year-old daughter, Bertha, were renting an apartment at 411 East 17th Street, which was a block over from Mary Miller's boarding house mentioned earlier. 3 years later, on April 18, 1903, Kate Bausch died in Manhattan, New York. She was 45. She was cremated at Middle Village, Queens County, New York. Her daughter Bertha was a month away from her 15th birthday when her mother passed. I was unable to find the cause of Kate's death, though. Back to the story. After the policeman had left Kate's ashes at the morgue, the plan was that they would remain there for a while, and if nobody claimed Kate's remains, she would be buried in Potter's Field. Why Kate's ashes were left outside a window of Mary Miller's boarding house, we'll probably never know. My first thought was that maybe after Kate died, her husband and daughter moved to Miller's boarding house and put her ashes outside so Kate could enjoy the sights and sounds of New York. But on further reading, I found another report from the Watchman Daunt. He'd seen the canister about 4 months prior, behind the bar of the saloon, on the corner of 16th and 3rd. It was after hours, and one of the other watchmen, Frank Dutton, showed it to him. Neither watchman could understand why the ashes of a deceased person had been left behind a bar. Their best guess was that the ashes had been left by a patron by mistake, after he or she had stopped by the saloon, and then the bartender put the ashes behind the bar as a kind of lost and found. Daunt said he didn't know what Dutton had done with the ashes after that night. So perhaps it had been the watchman Dutton who had left Kate Bausch's remains on high, so she would have a view of the city. Again, I'm pretty sure we'll never know. But whoever or whatever the reason, Kate seemed to want someone to know her remains were outside, because after Kate's ashes were moved to the morgue, the tenants never heard another ghostly sound. Kate was eventually buried at the Fresh Pond Crematory and Columbarium in Middle Village, Queens County, New York. Fred Bausch died 2 years after his wife on May 6, 1907. He was 39, and he was buried next to Kate. And it appears their daughter, Bertha, had been put into a boarding house situation with two people who were widowed. She went on to work as a housekeeper. And I looked up the address of Mrs. Mary Miller's boarding house at 147 East 16th Street, New York, and at this time, it's being built into a high-rise building. 2020 has been an unusually trying year for most of us. I would harbor a guess that all of us have had interference in at least one segment of our lives, maybe even affecting the happiness in your life, and just coping with changes like those can be stressful in itself. But rest assured that whatever you might need help with, the online counseling of BetterHelp is there for you. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. At BetterHelp, you'll be matched with your own licensed professional therapist, someone who will help you develop strategies for coping with stress, grief, relationships, anger, family conflict, sleeping, anything that's affecting the happiness and well-being of your life. And you'll be addressing these matters without leaving the comfort of your own home, and knowing that anything you share is completely confidential between you and your licensed professional. If finances are a concern, you should know that BetterHelp is more affordable than your brick-and-mortar offline counseling. Plus, BetterHelp has financial aid available. BetterHelp is this. It's professional, it's convenient, it's affordable, it's confidential, and it's there for you. And all of you Anything Ghost listeners from other countries outside the U.S., listen up. BetterHelp is available for clients worldwide. So it's no surprise that because so many people are using BetterHelp, they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Don't let that problem linger. Get some help, some better help, and start living that happier life you deserve. As an Anything Ghost listener, you get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/anythingghost. That's 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/anythingghost. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/anythingghost.
Hi, this is Sue Red, wishing all you Anything Ghost listeners a hauntingly happy Halloween. Have fun.
Hi, Lex. Hello, Anything Ghost listeners. My name's Lucy, and I live in the UK. I just wanted to talk about some experiences and one big experience I've had in a house that my parents live in currently. While I haven't lived there myself for 7 years, I did live there as a child and through college before I went off to university. The house itself is a Victorian manor house, which is situated in a small town in the UK between London and Portsmouth, which when the house was built in the Victorian period was a very important trade route. And as far as we're aware, the house, which was built in the Victorian picturesque style, was built by a wealthy merchant who used to use these he used the trade link between London and Portsmouth, and that's how he made his money. My parents own a third of what would have been this lovely, beautiful manor house. And with their house, they also have the old coach house in the back, which would have been used to store the coaches in the Victorian period. The rooms they have, so they downstairs, the front rooms, which look over to our front garden and the road, which is a very quiet road. The other houses around are new modern bungalows, mainly, which, you know, mainly older people live in to retire. So very, very quiet. So the front rooms of this house would have been used by the wealthy family. So they would have been sitting rooms, and then the back rooms of the house, there's the old kitchen with a big massive fireplace that they would have used to cook things on, and there is the servant stairs, which are very small, very narrow, not very grand, that servants would have used to get up and down. Then on the top floor there is the rooms, some of the less grand rooms that would have been used by the family. And they're very beautiful. They have marble fireplaces and the old servant bells, bell pulls by the fireplaces, which would have connected to an old board with different bells on in the kitchen. And it's a very, very lovely, beautiful house with lots of the original flooring and windows. They're all lovely lead-paned, panelled windows. And certainly we get lots of people walking by taking pictures of the house. And I'm told that the other two portions of the old manor house had things like the ballroom in. So certainly it was a very beautiful and very lovely house when it was built in the Victorian period. We don't know much more about the history of the house. We know at some point it was used as a hotel. And for that reason there's sinks in a lot of the rooms, which is quite strange. But we don't know much more about who lived there and when and what happened to those people who lived there. Certainly the people who owned the house before us told us they used to find musket balls and old Spanish coins in the soil and the ground. But they didn't really tell us of any interesting history or experiences they had. So living in the house, while a beautiful house, I and my siblings always felt quite uneasy to live there when we were alone. Despite the beautiful, lovely big windows, even in the daytime, it always felt very gloomy. And certainly, it wasn't nice to spend any time in there alone, as you always felt like you were being watched. And I remember many times when I was home alone, you know, I would close myself in a room and be very scared to leave the room, even go to the toilet, because you know you'd hear creaking and just generally feel very uneasy, which maybe can be chalked up to me being, you know, a worried young girl and teen. But certainly it was never a house I felt very comfortable in. My family, I lived there with my parents, who obviously still live there at the moment, and my siblings, somewhat shared some of the same feelings I did, and some of the small experiences I'm going to tell you about are from them. I used to have lots of nightmares in that house, which I never have had living anywhere else. You know, I'd almost wake up every night with the most vivid nightmares, to the point that even, you know, as an older teenager, 16, 17, you know, I'd have to get my parents in the middle of the night and sleep next to them in bed because I was just so scared. And I'd also have things like in my room, which I had by myself, I'd have feelings and sensations of being touched and hands stroking down my back. And we had two very lovely cats who would watch, you know, in the middle of the night, watch things go side to side. And I always wrote it off, or tried to write it off, as bugs. But it was just things like that made me feel very, very uneasy. And certainly it wasn't, I felt very uneasy every time darkness fell. My mum had an experience, and she is very much a deep sceptic of anything supernatural or paranormal, that she swears to this day she isn't making up or elaborating. And in this story or experience, she was sat using the computer one day. We were all either at school or at work, and she was home doing some work on the laptop. And where this laptop was situated, it was kind of adjacent to the servant stairs. And from the bottom, when you were sat downstairs using the computer, you could only see the last couple of stairs before the stairs turned up past a wall. And then the room next to this was the old kitchen, which we call the yellow room because it's painted yellow. And so she was sat there, home alone, using the computer, very, you know, very lost in whatever she was doing. And she noticed out of the corner of her eye, she wasn't really thinking about it much. She saw someone turn and go up the stairs. And this person was very tall, which none of us are. The tallest person in our family is 5'6". So it definitely wasn't any of our family. And obviously, they should have all been out at work at school. And also, as well, my mum noticed when she sat back and realised that someone had just gone up the stairs, that there was no sound made. And these stairs are the original stairs that came with the house. So they're very, very creaky, very, you know, even if you're trying to be quiet, you will make a noise. And she found that very, very strange. And given the fact as well, this person was wearing very formal, fancy dress, but you know, nice, beautiful suit, which I think she described as black with a crisp white shirt and looking very smart. Obviously, she didn't make up much detail because it was out of the corner of her eye. She wondered whether maybe she'd seen one of the old servants, and certainly the old kitchen being in the room next over, she wondered maybe whether it was the old butler. And yes, not much else happened with that experience, but she still swears to this day that it's true and that she's not, you know, making anything up or pulling our legs. And I certainly find that very interesting and very compelling, given that my mother is very, very, very much against anything paranormal and is a very logical woman. The other small experience I had before I'll get onto the biggest experience I had in this house, and there were many experiences, but these are just the ones I can think of. So I used to play the cello, and one day I was home alone playing the cello in the yellow room, which, as I mentioned, used to be the old kitchen. And in this room, we had a very, very small chandelier attached to the ceiling. And above the room above was my parents' bedroom. And in my parents' bedroom, there was the original floorboards, which were beautiful. But obviously, as you can imagine, given they were very old, very squeaky. And certainly if you were sat in the yellow room and my parents upstairs in their room, you could hear them walking about, particularly my father, who has very, very flat feet, very stomps around. And when he kind of is up there stomping around, the chandelier kind of gently rocks and sways as well. And so you can always tell he's up in the room. So as I mentioned, I was home alone one day practicing the cello. It must have been holidays and my parents were out at work. My brother was probably seeing friends and I was practicing the cello hard, being a very diligent student. And I kind of noticed the chandelier was swinging a bit, which was quite unusual, but, you know, kind of wrote it off as an old house. You know, these things happen. So I continued to play. You know, I felt a bit uneasy. As I said, I always felt quite uneasy in that house, but, you know, just wrote it off as me being silly and being overdramatic. So I continued playing, and then I could hear the squeaking of floorboards. And again, sometimes in the middle of the night or the very early morning when the hot water comes on, the floorboards squeak. And so, you know, again, kind of ignore this. And then I kind of stopped for a bit and kind of, you know, in fear, kind of listened out for anything more. Nothing. The chandelier had stopped. No squeaking, nothing. So I put my cello down, feeling a bit too spooked. And then just as I did that, I could hear heavy footsteps in my parents' room. And this, you could hear the squeaking of the floorboards, and the chandeliers started to shake much more kind of violently now. And being very, very scared, I ran out of the house and I sat for hours until my parents get home in a deck chair by the coach house, because I was just so scared to the point where I couldn't even look at the back of the house because the windows to both of those rooms were at the back of the house, and I was really scared I would see something. The biggest experience I had, and maybe it can be explained away as something logical, and certainly there are many things I've tried to explain as logical but just don't seem to fit in with this big experience I had. So the experience I had my own room for the first time in a long while at the front of the house, and it was a very big room. It would have been one of the ones that the family used, and it had a beautiful, beautiful marble surround to the fireplace with one of the servant pools. And at the where my bed was at the very front of the house, and it had by my bed it had two massive original lead paned windows, which were about 4 foot in height by about 3 foot wide, very big. And from these windows, even when they weren't open, they were closed, you could see onto our front garden. You could see the gate leading to our front door. You could see the street, which I mentioned was a very, very quiet street, the houses across from the street, and quite a fair way up and down the street. And particularly at night, there were also some street lights, so it was quite well illuminated. The only thing you could not see from my bedroom windows was directly below the front door. The front door had a little roof over it, so you couldn't see directly down, but you could certainly see if anyone came up to the door. You could see the path, and certainly the gate would squeak a lot to get to the front door, and you could also see the front garden. So this was one evening, I was asleep in bed, and I think it was the summertime, but it was dark out, and it was probably the middle of the night. And I remember I had been in the complete deep sleep, no dreams, no nightmares, and I sat bolt upright in bed. And I remember sitting there for about a minute or so. Obviously, I was just woken up from sleep, so I was slightly confused, very confused. And I remember thinking, how strange for me to do this, as I've never ever sat up from bed before like that, ever. And also, so I found it quite strange because I didn't feel scared, I didn't feel nervous, I didn't feel afraid, as I might have done had I kind of sat bolt upright from a nightmare. And certainly, as I mentioned, I used to have lots of nightmares, and I, even if I couldn't remember the nightmare, I'd always wake up feeling frightened. But this wasn't the case, and I'd never sat up like this before. But I sat there, you know, kind of got out of the fog of being asleep, and I didn't really hear anything. I didn't feel strange or nervous or anything like that. Certainly couldn't hear it with the rest of my family awake, anything like that. So I kind of lay back down, got ready to go back to sleep again. And then I heard banging on the front door. And as I might have guessed, a lot of the front door was the original old front door. And when anyone would bang or knock on the door, it would rattle the kind of supports of the little roof of the porch, and that then would kind of like shake the big windows by my bed. And I remember hearing someone bang on this door, and how strange it was that this was happening. And I remember feeling quite strange, quite scared, and certainly, you know, from the minute or two I'd been awake, I certainly hadn't heard anyone come up to the door, you know. And the force and the kind of the frequency that someone was banging, you know, it was a bang of someone who's desperate or, you know, angry to get in. And, you know, I thought you know, you would have probably heard someone run up, and you certainly would have heard the gate squeak and everything. And then as soon as the bang started, it stopped. Probably was only about 10 seconds. And so, being very confused and probably thinking maybe it was people playing a prank, I got up, opened the curtains to my windows and looked out. And I probably stood there for about 2-3 minutes or so. Saw no movement, nothing, no other groups of people, nothing at all. And I kind of stood there thinking that maybe whoever it was, I would either see them walk away from the house or walk around the house or, you know, anything. Obviously, I couldn't see down onto the front door because of the roof of the porch. And so didn't see anything, hear anything. So I thought, okay, maybe it's just some teenagers that I hadn't caught doing whatever, went back to bed. And then I'd probably been back in bed about 30 seconds, a minute, and this bang started up again, and a young woman's voice started saying, this time, help me, help me, can somebody help me, can somebody help me? And this banging was absolutely furious and juddering the front of the house, and so loud that my parents, being very light sleepers, I was surprised they didn't wake up. And so again, I went to the windows and I looked down, because obviously, you know, in a situation like this, me being, you know, a 15, 16 year old girl, and a very small one at that, you know, I was wanted to kind of see who it was and what was happening. And again, I saw nothing and no one. And pretty much as soon as I went to go and look down, the banging stopped, you know. And you think if someone had been that desperate and so frightened, they would have, you know, continued to bang and continued to scream. And, you know, maybe if now by this point they hadn't got our attention, they might have gone to one of our neighbours' houses who were, you know, a couple of feet down the road. You know, so I would have seen them leaving, or at least heard them. And at this point, so I stood there for about 10 minutes just waiting to see someone leave. Nothing at all. And nothing else really happened with that experience. You know, after waiting there for 10 minutes and seeing nothing, I went back to bed and didn't hear anything else at all. And certainly I asked my whole family in the morning, both my parents and my siblings, did you hear anything last night? Because it was so loud and rattled, you know, my window so much, you know, I would have very much expected them to wake up, and nothing. They didn't hear anything at all. And to this day, you know, I've tried to explain it away as a nightmare or sleep paralysis, you know, or kids playing a prank, but certainly doesn't fit any of those. And I just thought it was a very interesting experience and something that, you know, to this day I can still remember absolutely vividly. So that's the end of my experiences. Thank you very much for listening. Take care.
Hello, Lex, and all you anything ghosters out there. This is Greg from Muskogee, Oklahoma, wishing you a very happy Halloween. And remember, take care.
A story from Brandy in California. It happens at Grandma's house. Nestled in the foothills of Ventura, California, is my grandmother's house. It sits at the top of a hill in a picturesque neighborhood, flanked by views of the rolling hills behind. It's a large, spacious, two-story dream house with a shaded garden and a large patio. Naturally, it was the idyllic family gathering place for decades. But despite its charm, something about Grandma's house has never been quite right. Growing up, I was terrified of the house. Even during those big, happy family gatherings while playing with all my cousins and siblings, I never felt at ease. I always felt as if there was something lurking just behind what I could see. I'm not the only one in the family to have experienced these things. My mom, siblings, aunts, cousins have all witnessed and felt unexplainable things throughout the years. The most notable occurrence that the whole extended family witnessed happened during a family Christmas party one year. Either I hadn't been born yet at this point, or I was too young to remember, so I'm relaying my mom's recollection of the event. According to her, the entire family was gathering downstairs to exchange Christmas presents. From the sitting room where everyone was, there was a clear view of the wooden staircase and the upstairs landing. Everyone was merrily talking to each other, when suddenly they heard heavy footsteps walking across the wood floor of the hallway upstairs. That was odd. Everyone in the family was downstairs and accounted for. The group all fell silent and glanced upstairs. The footsteps continued. By this point, the person walking would have been in full view of the family, but still they saw no one. The mysterious footsteps reached the landing and proceeded downstairs. Every footstep on that wooden staircase was loud and echoed across the room. The footsteps walked all the way down the staircase, eventually halting for a moment at the bottom of the stairs, just mere feet away from where the family was gathered. Everyone looked at each other. Then the footsteps began again, this time continuing on and walking past where they were sitting, heading out of sight and through the kitchen before finally disappearing out the back door. Most of what the extended family witnessed over the years was mild and easily brushed off. The worst happenings always seemed to be concentrated around my immediate family. Whatever the reason, the thing that exists in that house has a particular distaste for my mother and her children. My mom's experiences started before I was born. Shortly before the birth of their second child, my mother and father moved into his parents' house, my grandmother's. From the very beginning, strange things began happening. My mom would hear movement downstairs, despite being the only one home. One day, she was upstairs working on something when she heard the rear sliding door of the house downstairs open and close again. Knowing she was the only one there, she got up to check. As she walked, she heard the door downstairs start opening and closing repeatedly. Then came the sounds of furniture moving and scraping across the floor, as if several people were moving things about. As she stood there, paralyzed, the small family dog came sprinting upstairs, barking and growling. It immediately ran behind her and away from the commotion downstairs. My mom crept to the upstairs landing and peered down, but saw nothing. As soon as she came into view, all of the noises stopped. As she turned to head back down the hallway, the noises resumed with a fury. She turned back and looked again, only to once again find everything still and quiet. This happened several more times before my mom finally retired to her bedroom, only to have the noises stop entirely. On a different day, my mom was showering upstairs. Someone knocked on the bathroom door and called her name. My mom responded, shouting over the running water. The person on the other side of the door didn't answer. Instead, they started knocking faster and louder while repeating her name. Finally, my mom turned off the water and dried off to go see what the person wanted. Wrapping a towel around herself, she opened the bathroom door to find an empty hallway. On another occasion, my mom was in the later stages of pregnancy with one of my older brothers and was heading downstairs from the upstairs landing. As she reached the top of the staircase, she suddenly felt strong hands shove her, trying to throw her down the tall wooden stairs. She caught herself on the railing just before she fell. She spun around to confront her attacker, but again, no one was there. There were times when strange things happened that my mom was blamed for. One afternoon, my grandmother had just finished washing and putting away the kitchen silverware. My mom went into the empty kitchen to grab a glass of water and then retreated upstairs. A few minutes later, my grandmother yelled angrily up at her for her to come downstairs. My mom entered the kitchen to find it a mess. The kitchen drawers were laying across the floor in disarray, with all the silverware strewn across the ground. As they were the only two at home, my grandmother blamed my mom for it, no matter how much she tried to convince her that she had nothing to do with it. On a different night, my mom and dad were in their room talking when they were interrupted by a knock on their bedroom door. My mom said, "Come in," waiting for whoever it was on the other side to open the door. All was silent for a moment, and no one came in. My parents shrugged to each other and continued talking. A moment later, the knock happened again, and again they both fell silent. My mom called out for whoever it was to come in. This time, the doorknob slowly turned. The door slowly creaked open, but at first it looked like there was no one on the other side. That is until my mom looked closer. On the other side of the door handle was a woman's hand. There was no body connected to it, only the lone, disembodied hand. The hand was small and unbelievably pale white, tipped with crimson red fingernails. After a moment of staring at it in horror, the door slowly closed again. The incident with the disembodied hand wouldn't be the last. I saw it myself, years later, while playing. One afternoon, my cousins and I were all involved in a classic game of hide-and-seek. One cousin and I both decided to hide upstairs in the very same bedroom that my mom and dad had slept years before. We hid behind a folding table in the room and giggled, shushing each other. After a few minutes, we heard the door to the room open. She and I peeked over the top of the table to a ghastly sight. No one stood in the doorway. The only sign that someone was there was that horrific woman's hand clutching the doorknob. As long as I live, I will never forget that horrible, deathly paleness of it and the color of those bright red nails. My cousin and I both screamed and ducked back behind the table. When I finally gathered the courage to peek back at the door, the hand was gone. This wouldn't be the only thing I experienced while in the company of my cousin. One day we were laying in a hammock in the backyard together. Both were completely still, enjoying the warm summer day. Suddenly the hammock flipped violently and cast us both into the ground. My cousin slammed her head into the metal support for the hammock, and we both laid there in a daze for a moment, wondering what had happened. Neither of us had moved. After that, we didn't sit together in that hammock anymore. One night, my cousin and I had a sleepover. A friend of ours and I slept on the floor in a pile of blankets, while my cousin slept with her mom in the bed. We fell asleep without a problem, but something woke me in the middle of the night. When I opened my eyes, I saw a large black shadow standing at my feet, between me and the door. I didn't have my glasses on, so I squinted at it for a moment, assuming that it was our friend, and that she had gotten up to use the bathroom. I brushed it off, rolling over, and went back to sleep. The next morning, my cousin informed me that she had seen a black shape leaning over me during the night, and that our friend, who I had mistakenly attributed the shadow to, was still sleeping soundly beside me the entire time. And while these stories are certainly unnerving, I've saved the best for last. This is one of my earliest and most horrifying memories. I was young, probably 4 or 5 years old. My grandparents had a shaded, fenced-in garden on the side of the house. Close to the side door was a small koi pond. I loved watching them swim in that pond as a child. One day I was standing about 2 feet back from the pond while watching the fish. I was alone in the garden, but I suddenly felt like someone was there with me. Before I could react, I felt 2 strong hands push me from the center of my back, sending me careening forward until I landed face first in the pond. The pond was shallow. I should have been able to stand up, but instead, I felt those same strong arms holding me down underneath the water. I struggled and thrashed, trying to claw my way out to no avail. After a moment, I was jerked out of the pond and into fresh air. Thankfully, my mom had been watching from inside and witnessed the entire incident. She had seen me suddenly fall forward and leapt into action. As she came to pull me from the water, it looked as if someone was holding me under. As soon as I was out of the water, I started sobbing and screaming. I insisted that I'd been pushed and swore up and down that it had been my older brother, as he was the type to do that sort of thing. I refused to believe it hadn't been him, because I knew that someone had pushed me. But my brother had been inside the entire time and was nowhere near the garden when that happened. I was entirely alone. Many more things happened over the years in Grandma's house, far too many to detail in such a short amount of time. All I know is that somehow there is something in that house, something that holds a grudge against my mom and my family. I've since moved far away from that house, and whatever inhabits it. And as far as I'm concerned, no amount of distance will ever be enough. A story from Chautauqua, Kansas, Mrs. Windsor's Ghost at the Hard Rock Cemetery. An urban legend from 1902. The Hard Rock Cemetery is an old cemetery located at 1502 Road 29 in Chautauqua County, Kansas. It sits in a very remote area right off a gravel-covered Road 29. From Independence Road, turn onto the gravel road 29 and drive up about 1.5 miles. The cemetery is on the right side. I'll have a modern photo of it posted on anythingghost.com. Just northeast of the cemetery is a wooded area of blackjack oak trees. They cast long, ghostly shadows across the tombstones of the cemetery. On the other side of the cemetery is a sagging old stone fence. In 1902, the cemetery sat just north of what was the Hard Rock Schoolhouse, and it was rumored to be haunted. An urban legend about the Hard Rock Cemetery was about a family living in the area in the early 1800s, the Windsors. One year, the mother of the family became ill and soon passed away. The locals began preparations for the funeral, and the husband decided he didn't want to buy a shroud for his wife's body, so it was decided she would be buried in clothing she wore while she was alive. While Mrs. Windsor was being clothed for the burial, they discovered that her illness caused her feet to swell up, and as a result, her shoes were too small for her. The husband was contacted about this, but rather than purchase new shoes, he decided to force the small ones on her feet. After the church service was over, a slow and solemn funeral procession winded its way to the Hard Rock Cemetery, where Mrs. Windsor's remains were buried. A small mound of dirt was left where she was interred, as sobbing friends and family made their way back to their homes. One evening, shortly after the burial, a group of small men were riding their horses along the dark and lonely gravel stretch of Road 29. Suddenly, one of the young men grabbed a companion by the shoulder and pointed toward the Hard Rock Cemetery. They all looked in the direction of the cemetery and saw, upon a tombstone, a ghost-like figure. The ghost had one slender hand firmly clutching the long white garment that it wore, while the other hand seemed to be pulling at its feet. As the men slowly brought their horses to a stop, the moaning ghost lifted its head up, looked over at the men, and began to slowly rise and move toward them. It began wringing its hands and calling out in agony, "Take off my shoes, please! Oh, please, take these tight shoes off! Oh, my shoes, my shoes!" The group commanded their horses to gallop, and they didn't stop until they arrived back home. Two of the men left their horses standing in the barn with saddles and bridles left on them and ran straight into their house, out of fear of spending any time outside. Many have reported seeing the same ghost, assumed, of course, to be the ghost of Mrs. Windsor, who is unable to rest peacefully in her grave with the tight shoes on her feet. It's believed the ghost comes back to those who pass the cemetery to get sympathy for her ordeal. Some thought about trying to remove the ghost's shoes, but anyone who considers that is either chased away by her mournful cries, or some say they are chased away by a voice that tells them, "Run," and they indeed run. One critic of this story, shortly after the ghost story surfaced in 1902, said he lived in Hard Rock for 11 years and knew nothing about a family named Windsor or a ghost. But I actually found that in 1881 there was a person named J.M. Windsor. He lived in a nearby township of Washington, and the distance from Washington to Hard Rock would have been about 5 miles or less. It's basically right down the road. So there was a possibility of a Mrs. Windsor being buried there. The validity of the tight shoes, however, is another thing. So that's the urban legend of Mrs. Windsor's ghost at the Hard Rock Cemetery. If you're ever in Chautauqua, Kansas, at night, jump on Independence Road and then make another turn down the lonely dark gravel path of Road 29 and visit the Hard Rock Cemetery. It'll be right up on the right, about a mile and a half. But be ready to run. And just for kicks, I did a little research on the girl that wrote the article. It was in a school newspaper, actually. Her name was Irma, and she was about 17 at the time she wrote it. And it raised a bit of a fuss in the area. I think the landowners didn't like the idea of being told they had a ghost at that cemetery. And there were others, there were people complaining about the article. But it was a 17-year-old kid, and her name was Irma, and she went on to be a school teacher. She taught at a tiny school called Mount Tabor, T-A-B-O-R, and it was a one-room, I guess, religious schoolhouse. It was built in the 1870s. And then she got married later and such and such. But I'll have a picture of that schoolhouse, too. It's a pretty cool-looking old building. It's still there. But anyway, that's all at anythingghost.com. Follow me now to part two of the Anything Ghost 2020 Mega Macabre Halloween Special. It's a mouthful. Will you hear about Sylvia's haunted high school, a haunted restroom at a Philippines high school, and the St. James Cemetery ghost on the East Coast, and a lot more. Plus, it's commercial free. Well, I do talk a little bit about the VIP group for about 30 seconds. But you'll find part two where you found part one. So onward, ghost story soldiers, to part two. And go ahead and bring along that semi-transparent man who's in the wool suit and fedora, seated in the back there. Thank you.
Thank you.